Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Navman. Now, during the week, I was reminded of the fact that a lot of people don't quite know about one of the particular products about Navman and its dual benefits. And it's the MyCam GPS, in that in a conversation I was having and I was talking about Navman, they said, oh, it's great, they make navigation units. I said, yeah, but they also make dash cams. Did you know that? And they said, oh, I think I do remember that they make dash cams. And I had to remind them, do you know you can get a two-in-one device? The MyCam GPS is something that I would regularly use on a road trip. A, because it's going to have amazing offline navigation, so you don't need to worry about the internet access for your phone or anything like that for your maps. It's all on the device, and you can download extra maps to make sure it's all up to date as well with those monthly updates. But with that GPS unit, you've also got a camera on the back, and that camera on the back is recording everything that is in front of you for the entire road trip. And with a micro SD card, you can make sure that literally the entire road trip is captured should you really want to, and you've always got that backup. So in that one unit, you've got navigation plus the dash cam on board. It becomes that perfect road trip companion. And again, for $300 recommended retail price, it almost is the price of a GPS unit on its own or a dash cam on its own. And here we are talking about something that's a two-in-one. I really recommend people consider something like this. If you're planning some road trips, you're planning on seeing Australia, do make sure you're not going to get lost, and please make sure you're recording what's happening on the road in front of you. Even better if you can record with a rear camera as well, because so many accidents do happen from behind. And again, having that evidence means that it's no longer your word against theirs. Check the footage, go to the camera, go to the replay, and you'll be able to see exactly what happened, what speed you were doing, where you were, what the conditions were like, and exactly have all that recorded. It's extremely important in any situation. That's the MyCam GPS from Navman. I'm a particular fan of that product. I'm not crazy about buying just a navigation unit anymore. I think when you can get these two-in-one devices, it makes so much more sense. Only one thing stuck to your windscreen as well. So check it out. Head to navman.com.au. Let's get on with this show. Now, in front of me today is a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc. I don't drink a lot of Sauvignon Blanc. I do enjoy a white wine, but Sauvignon Blanc to me just isn't always up my alley. This one, however, is from New Zealand, from Hawke's Bay, and I think it's one of the better areas that produces Sauv Blanc. It has a lot more fruit, a lot more aromatics coming through. I'm really actually enjoying this more than I ever would. A Sauvignon Blanc from Australia, to be honest. Really nice. I will say, we're talking about low alcohol, 7%. So really what you'd find in a beer, you're now getting this in a wine. So you could potentially have more of it without having that intoxicating feeling. $23 for this particular bottle. I think I may have mentioned it's called State of Light. I'm really quite enjoying this. We're going to be sipping on this throughout the show. The entire bottle is 4 standard drinks. So 750 mils, 4 standard drinks. If you're sharing this with a friend, it's not bad. In terms of alcohol content, you're doing pretty okay. Now, today on the show, we're going to talk about a number of things. We're going to talk about the floods. I don't know where you live, but I'm almost, I'm amongst the water. I'm not normally amongst the water, but we are at the moment in New South Wales. Some news around Fitbit, some news around Tesla. We're going to talk about a new device from Amazon that's going to compete with the Chromecast. We're going to talk about some baby tech that I've been checking out. I did a Studio 10 segment with that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of those products. And we're answering a listener question about a smartphone at the $250 mark. So if that sounds like something you would be interested in, stay tuned for that as well. Now, look, first and foremost, I will talk about the floods. Where I live in New South Wales, about an hour or so from the city, especially look where I grew up in particular, is at the moment fairly inundated with water. The Hawkesbury River has flooded. We've had plenty of rain. The dam has had to spill in at the same time. And, water levels have risen. I've seen creek beds that we used to, as kids, almost be able to jump across, turn into oceans. And it's been absolutely amazing to see, but also completely devastating for so many people. Friends, family that we know have been impacted by this. And it's what's been fascinating for me this time, because we haven't had a flood of such a magnitude like this in such a long time, is how much of this I'm witnessing through social media. And when you're recognizing the locations and you know people who live in those areas, you feel a little bit differently about the stuff that you're seeing on the TV or through social media as well. And, you know, when you're seeing people who leave home, they might live miles away from the affected area, and they make it a tourist destination to go and see the floods as if it's a new attraction. And they'll drive maybe an hour to get there to take photos or to take video, share it online, not for awareness purposes, because everybody knows that the floods are going on, not to inform people of what is actually happening, because that's not where their friends and family live, but to really chase likes or to chase retweets or to hope that it ends up on the news. I've found it particularly disturbing, given where I am and knowing who's involved and things like that. I've found it a little bit different this year. And, you know, people who are listening, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, as to how you've been experiencing natural disasters, how it's impacted you, and where you see content. While I love the idea of people being informed through social media, understanding the current situation, I think if you're making it, you know, a family journey to go and see something that is devastating other families, just to take photos and post them online, I think is really strange. And I'm hoping that anyone who has been doing that is planning on returning in a month's time to support the local community, to support local business there, and to help people get back on their feet, because they're the people who really need the help. You know, turning up to take a photo and then leave is disturbing if you're not planning on contributing or helping out in some way. So the reason I was actually talking about that is because I went to my parents' place just the other day, and it was amazing when you're confronted with something like this, you think about how you would capture or share it. And I took a drone up. I took the DJI Mavic Air 2, and it was a way for us to see a whole new angle or a whole new perspective of what was surrounding us. Now, my parents' place, the creek bed that's near them, as I said, has essentially become an ocean now. You couldn't grasp the magnitude of it without seeing it from the air. And in the past, I was thinking, wow, in the past, you would have had to rely on a news helicopter to come through and capture that vision. And what I was seeing on the news has not been of that area. It's been of other areas that have been impacted, mostly where homes have been impacted, which makes complete sense for them to be there. But it was amazing that I could just drive there and in a minute send a drone up into the sky and show my parents, show others, this is what's actually going on literally a few hundred meters away from the house, and just how close the floodwaters had gotten, how wide it has gotten and things like that. So I just think it's amazing. I just think it's absolutely amazing what you can now do with technology, especially when it's for the right purposes and not just to, you know, to be shared for likes and retweets. I think that's a little bit weird. Now, let's get on with some other tech news. That wasn't really tech news. Let's get on with some tech news. Now, something that I wasn't actually expecting to hear about this week, by the way, that 7-Down Blanc is getting better and better. One of the things I wasn't expecting to hear about this week was an integration between Fitbit and Tile. Now, Fitbit, everyone knows what Fitbit is. They make these wearables that track your steps and do other things. If you don't know what Tile is, they effectively make products that you can attach to your keys, attach to a bag. And if you were to lose it, it uses Bluetooth to communicate to your phone and almost constant communication to keep the location of that product known. And that means that if you were to lose it, you can ring your keys. And if you lose your keys and you literally cannot find them, you can mark them as lost. And other people who have the Tile app can actually help you find it if they come across it and things like that. So this integration between Fitbit and Tile is interesting because it means that if you lose your wearable, it would be easily found through the Tile app or through the Tile community. Fantastic. The product that they've enabled it on is the Inspire 2. This is a product that has been on the market for about 6 months already. It's a product that is more in their mid-range. It's a cheaper product. I think it's about $180. So it's surprising to see that if you're going to come out and announce this partnership, that you start with this particular model, not the Versa, not the Sense and things like that. So a little bit strange. However, it's interesting. And I think as this starts to evolve further, I cannot wait to see this Tile technology on all of the Fitbit products. And look, I think one of the weird things, again, is that Fitbits aren't taken off your wrist that often, only to recharge, and that could be once a week. So if you've lost it while it's recharging, it's probably where you've plugged it in. It's pretty rare that you're taking it off for any other reason. And if it is, maybe it's to shower, but wherever you left it, maybe on the bathroom, in the bathroom. You know, I think it's a bit strange. If the Fitbit has come off your wrist, then yes, now we see a real need for the tile application, but at least it's there. And I would like to see more technology with this, whether it's tablets, laptops, anything. Tile should be built into everything. And the good thing about the Tile range is that you can get small stickers that can be attached to skateboards, bicycles, you know, any other item that you think you may lose, and you can add that to the Tile ecosystem as well. I have one with my passport in case I need to find that. I have one attached to my luggage for when we used to travel. I have one attached to a TV remote because I have a two-year-old in the house and they can go missing, and that means I can quickly find the TV remote. And I think that they're absolutely amazing. Battery life on Tile products is usually 1 to 2 years. So another great advantage there is you're not having to recharge these things often, and you'll get notifications very early on as the battery life starts to diminish as well. So a really cool thing to have. Now, the other interesting thing I wanted to quickly talk about was Tesla. Now, I've driven Teslas, and I've driven all of the ones that are available in Australia, the S, the 3, and the X. However, well, I've never bought one. Tesla is now officially accepting Bitcoin as payment. If you want to buy a Tesla today and you don't have money in your bank, maybe you have money in a Bitcoin wallet. And if you have any involvement in cryptocurrency, you would know how volatile that market is. And what's fascinating to me is a car that perhaps was 80,000 Australian dollars could be bought through Bitcoin. Now, if you have Bitcoin, you know it has a value at that point in time. If you were to pay for the car in Bitcoin using its current value, what fascinates me is that in a year's time, in 2 years' time, how much have you actually paid for that car? Because if Bitcoin doubles in value over that year, won't it suck that you've paid through Bitcoin because you could have kept it, paid for it in actual money, and now your Bitcoin, having been worth twice as much, could have actually made the car free? I find it fascinating, and I'm interested to hear from people what you think. Would you pay for a car in cryptocurrency knowing that maybe you got in early on cryptocurrency and as a result, hey, this isn't worth that much to you? Maybe you put $1,000 in when it was really cheap and now you've got $300,000 worth of Bitcoin. Great. Power to you. I can see why you may want to splash out some of the Bitcoin to get your Tesla or another vehicle should it become available. But what happens when it's worth $1 million or $2 million? The idea that this car could appreciate or depreciate based on what you've spent on the car is of real concern to me. Now, the normal dollar, the Australian dollar or the US dollar that you would normally pay for the car with, doesn't have those kinds of fluctuations that Bitcoin does. So I'm fascinated by this. Probably a good move on Tesla's side, given that they obviously assume that that currency is not going down. They assume that if you pay one Bitcoin for a car, they hope that it's still going to be worth, that valuation will still be there in 2 years' time. I actually think that Tesla believes that they think one Bitcoin today is actually worth twice the amount in US dollars in a year's time. And that's why it's a good move for Tesla. But is it a good move for consumers? I don't quite think it is. I'd be curious to hear what you think. Now, again, you know that you can SMS me, right? You know you can reach out to me at any point. The number is 0467-439-078. There is a reason why I ask what you think. It's because I genuinely want to know. I don't want to just talk to myself. I want to hear from you and understand whether I'm barking up the wrong tree or the right tree. You let me know. Now, we have got a question from Carl. Carl has emailed through, which is fine. He must have gotten through the website and found my email address there. No problem at all, Carl. I appreciate the email. Let me read it out. Hi, Jeff. Heard your podcast about Oppo phones. It might have been a few episodes ago. Maybe we were giving one away. My iPhone 4S just died. Well done, Carl. You made a 4S last this long. Kudos to you, man. I think that's impressive. Now, he said he's gone to the repair shop. Basically, it's unrepairable. Probably not even worth repairing anyway. However, Carl is 71 years old. I love that you're listening to podcasts, Carl. Honestly, I really like that. Basically needs a phone for phone calls, messages, and apps because they are, you know, required nowadays. He needs Wi-Fi. Uses the camera on his phone as well. Is the Oppo One the one to go for? Budget of around $250. Carl, I'm going to have a quick sip of my wine, and you and I are going to talk about your options at that $250 price point that is guaranteed to tick those boxes. All right, Carl, so here we have two options I'm going to present to you for your next smartphone. And, you know, you're going from an iPhone 4S that has a pretty small display. It has huge pieces of plastic at the top and the bottom. It's got a home screen button. The camera is obviously quite dated as well. You're about to make some pretty big changes. Even if you were to stay with an iPhone, they look and feel completely different to the iPhone 4S. Now, by making a switch to an Oppo or any other branded phone outside of Apple, you will have a slight learning curve change in terms of where the apps are, how they function, and how they look. The learning curve isn't terribly steep, but I'm just going to call it out up front that it does look and feel a little bit different on screen. But trust me, when you're talking about, you know, phone calls, basic apps, messaging, and things like that, you'll find your way around that very quickly. Now, first of all, I'm going to talk to you about the Oppo A15. The Oppo A15, I'm looking at it right now on JB Hi-Fi and probably at others, you'll find it as well. $239. That is one of the models that we gave away on the show, and it could have been where you may have heard about Oppo in the first place. 32 gigs of storage, so you can have plenty of space to store these photos that you're talking about. You've got a 6.5-inch screen. That is quite a bit bigger than the iPhone 4S. In fact, the iPhone 4S as a whole device may fit inside the display on this Oppo phone. It's got a large battery. It's got three cameras on the back. Not that you'll need to worry about them. It will do that job for you. It's got a camera on the front if you're having video calls with grandkids or whatever the case may be. And it runs the Android operating system. So completely simple way that you can go for this if you're, for some reason, tied to Oppo. If you're interested in spending, not much more, $10 more. It's kind of crazy to even say that for $10 more. And I kind of would want you to do this based on your budget. We're looking at $249. So we're going to save a buck here. But you're going to get a Samsung Galaxy A12. Now, the A12 has 128 gigs of storage. And we're only talking about an extra $10 here, right? So an extra $10, we're going to put heaps more storage in. So you're never going to need to worry about, you know, not being able to save photos or videos that you're taking on the phone. You still have a large 6.5-inch screen, so no problems there. Very large display, going to make it really simple to use. Now, neither of these phones have a home button. It's all on screen. So there's a small three icons at the bottom that will allow you to go back or to home, and you can really navigate simply through the on-screen button. So don't worry there. It's got a larger battery than the Oppo device. This one has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, which based on your usage would get you through a day or 2 days almost easily. So depending on how you're using it, I think you'll find that no problem as well. But the one thing I'm calling out here, and one of the reasons I've suggested the Samsung, is that I know that on that device, if you go into settings and maybe get somebody to do this for you, if you get lost in the menu system and look for simple mode, you can enable a feature called simple mode that essentially allows you to choose the four or six apps that you use the most. It could be the phone, it could be the messages, it could be the web browser, maybe the COVID safe check-in, whatever the case is. And you put those on the home screen, and essentially it divides your home screen up into six sections where you've got those icons very clear. You don't need to worry about going into folders or anything like that. Put the main things you need on the front of the phone. So when you do turn on that 6.5-inch screen, bang, you're seeing everything that you need right at your fingertips, and it couldn't be simpler. The cameras on the back, yeah, it's got plenty. Like, you know, you've got no problem here. It's got four cameras on the back, whether you need them or not. It does 4G. It's not a 5G phone, but that does not matter. Trust me, it does not matter for what you need it to do. It's got Wi-Fi, it's got Bluetooth, and it's just going to be a very reliable phone. $249. I'm not going to tell you that you have to get this, but if my budget was $250, it's the phone I'm going for. Honestly, with that much storage, I know the cameras are good. I know the display is good. You're going with a very well-known brand. You're going to get software updates and things like that. And I think it's going to serve you really, really well. Look, I'd love to hear back from you, Carl. Let me know how you go. I hope, and one quick thing as well. You can still listen to podcasts, including this one, on an Android device. Just download the Google Podcasts app. It's one of my favorite ones for Android, and you can continue to listen to me there as well. So you will have that adjustment, and this is for anybody. Going from Apple to Android requires a little bit of adjustment. It's not hard. You will find that there is a like for like on every device. You just need to make sure that you go through the time, give yourself some time to get yourself set up, make sure things work and match up the way you once used to use them. So hope that helps, Carl. Please email me again. Let me know if you do need further advice. I'm happy to help you on that as well. Now, after this, we're going to talk about what Amazon has done, and then we're going to talk about some baby gadgets as well. Now, this week, Amazon has announced a $99 4K Fire TV stick. Now, what does that all mean? Essentially, we have the Google Chromecast. Everybody knows what the Google Chromecast is. It's a small dongle, almost similar to an Apple TV, that you can plug into your, you know, dumb TV and make it smart again. We're talking about access to apps like Netflix, Stan, Amazon Prime Video, Disney Plus. It's all there. Guess what? At the same price point, here we have Amazon's version. It's got the name of a Fire TV stick. Why does it need called that? Who knows and who cares? But it's a very similar product to the Chromecast. Now, at $99, it's also the exact same price. What's going on here? Well, it's an option. It's an alternative. We know that when I go to look at smart speakers, I can spend $150 on the Nest Audio from Google, or I can spend $150 on an Echo device from Amazon. Same thing from a display point of view. I can buy an Echo Show from Amazon, or I can buy a Nest Hub from Google. It's that simple. So now we have another option. This one has a voice remote, just like the Google one, that allows you to talk to it using Amazon's Alexa voice assistant rather than the Google assistant to help find TV shows and things like that. It's got a remote control, as I mentioned, which you can quickly jump into certain apps like the Amazon Prime app. It's got its own button. But essentially, the content is going to be very, very similar. When you think about all of those streaming services that you probably use, it should all be there. I'm going to be testing one, and the reason I'm going to be curious about this is because I want to make sure it has all of the streaming services relevant to Australia. What I found with the Chromecast was that it was very impressive how it had a lot of the catch-up services for Australian TV networks, and I haven't got that confirmed for the Fire Stick TV, or Fire TV Stick, whatever we call it. So anyway, it's on its way. I'll be giving it a proper run through side by side with them to compare them, because I do think that when you are someone who maybe isn't involved in smart speakers or anything like that, you just want to upgrade your smart TV. My default answer has been the Google Chromecast, because it's just at $100. Why would you buy the Apple TV? But it's always nice to have an alternative, because some people, for whatever reason, could be against Google and they just don't like Google, whatever it is, and Amazon could be their alternative. Let's just make sure it applies well for the country. Sometimes these products are so US-centric that they just don't have what you really want it to have. So that will be coming, $100. If you really want to buy one, go ahead and do so. I think it's available April 21st. That's actually quite a while away, almost a month away from this product landing in Australia. But hopefully you'll hear from me about whether you should buy one or stick to the Google alternative in the coming weeks. We'll wait and see for that review. Now, are you expecting a baby? Do you know someone who's expecting a baby? Well, Tristan McManus from Studio 10, his wife is expecting a baby, I think literally in a week or two. So I went on Studio 10 to talk about a whole range of gadgets that him and his wife could be considering for his upcoming third child, I believe. I'm going to talk about two of them because I think they're pretty fascinating. Whether you're expecting a baby or not, you won't believe just how far some baby tech has come. Listen to this. Baby monitors have been around forever. Not forever, long time. And for a lot of people, they might have had this portable screen where they put a camera inside the nursery and they could be watching TV while also staring at a screen, a black and white screen, to keep an eye on baby. The latest that I have tested is a company called Qubo, C-U-B-O. Now, the Qubo AI Plus smart baby monitor is insane. It looks like a fat bird, like a big fat budgie, because all the hardware is built into the stomach of the budgie, including the camera. And it can be propped up in a number of different ways. It's got a small stand that you can just put on a chest of drawers if you want it to look at the bassinet or the cot. It also comes with literally an assemble yourself style stand. So you can have a floor stand, or if you can rest it on something else, and it can then look down into the crib rather than from the side. And it also has a attachment that can be put straight onto the cot or the crib, if you call it, and then look down into, you know, to have a top-down view of baby from there. This thing is crazy and it's super high quality. I'm really impressed by it. Now, it's got infrared for night vision. It's got a 1080p Sony wide-angle lens where effectively, if you're looking down at the crib, you can see end-to-end of it as well. So it's got a really good view to make sure it covers all corners of the crib. It's got a light sensor, so it will adjust and things like that. The rotatable lens is manual, so when you set up the camera, you decide whether it's pointing down or pointing sideways, whatever it is. It's got microphones built in. It's got a night light and it's got a speaker. It pays attention to the temperature in the room and the humidity. But what's smart about it is what happens then within the app. The camera is able to use artificial intelligence, just like everything has artificial intelligence, but it uses the camera to track baby's sleep. So it will give you a report, just like your Fitbit does, around how long your baby was asleep for, whether it was tossing and turning. It will capture photos automatically when it thinks there's a moment happening. Maybe baby's just woken up and it's looking at the camera and smiling because babies tend to do that sometimes. It will just automatically snap a photo and appear in the app. It's almost an album that you can have of memories of what's been happening inside that crib. But it also does some safety detection. Now, this isn't replacing parenting, but it will give you notifications if you want to of when it can no longer see your baby's face. So if it detects that the baby's face is down or it's no longer visible because, you know, it's looking at the crib from top down, it will give you a notification on that. It can give you a notification when it hears crying. So maybe you're hearing impaired, maybe you're in a faraway room, maybe you're watching a movie, whatever the case may be, you can get notifications on your phone when it hears crying. So you've got all these notifications around what it can hear and what it can see. And I really like that. The sleep analytics is interesting because if you're having trouble with baby and you're talking to someone about sleeping patterns and things like that, you can actually present real-time data. And I think that's pretty cool. With all of that, you're looking at $389 for this baby monitor. Not extremely cheap, but for someone who is maybe an anxious parent or is new to parenting, or if you're hearing impaired for those features like the crying sensor and stuff like that, really fantastic. I love a baby monitor because it stops me from going into the room to check on them. And I only say that because when I walk around the house, it's very loud. I've got heavy feet, whatever the case may be, it's noisy. So if you can just check your phone to make sure the baby's asleep, it saves you from walking in there, potentially waking them up just to check if they were asleep. The other thing that I found interesting is a product called Snoo. Now, I think on my Instagram, you can watch the whole segment I did with Studio 10 where you can actually see this in action. But the Snoo Smart Sleeper, this is a bassinet for literally from like newborn to, I don't know, maybe less than 12 months. And we're not talking about using this for a long time, but you can put them in like a swaddle that has clips that clip them into the bassinet. And those clips actually keep the baby on their back. So you don't have to worry about them rolling over. You have no worries in that regard, but they're completely snuggled in. And when they are strapped in, the Snoo will also rock. And not rock as in side to side, as in tipping side to side, but rock in a flat horizontal motion left to right. So it tries to emulate the feeling of baby being back in the womb. It even plays white noise. There's white noise that comes through the speakers of the Snoo Smart Sleeper so that the baby can hear that noise. It's getting that rocking motion going and it should be putting them to sleep effectively automatically. What it also does is while baby is asleep, if for whatever reason the baby starts to wake up and get a little bit upset, the Snoo will kick back into gear. If it hears that there's some crying going on, some murmuring, it will start that gentle rocking motion again. If the crying starts to increase a little bit, it increases that rocking motion to make it feel like they're going for a drive in the car. Babies always sleep in the car. So it does that for you as well. And then eventually, I think it's around a minute or 180 seconds, you'll get a notification on your phone saying, come and get your baby. We've done everything we can. And then at that point, you become parent again. Because look, babies usually cry for what, three reasons. They're upset about nothing. They've done business and they need a nappy change, or they're hungry. So if it can solve one of them, great. If it can't solve that one, it's going to be one of the other two. So that's what it steps in for and tries to do for you. Now, the problem with this thing is because it's only being used for a short period of time and eventually need to transfer them to a cot when they get too big, There's no cots that do the same feature. So if you've been relying on this thing to put your kid to sleep, you're going to have a bit of a trouble weaning them off it. And it does have weaning programs built into it, but still. And also, you're looking at $1,500 to buy one of these. $1,495. Crikey Moses, that's a lot of money for a crib. It's a lot of money for a crib. Or bassinet, I should say. I think a crib is meant to be bigger. Crib is an American word, I believe. Anyway, it's really cool. Yes, it connects to your phone. It's a wild smart sleeper. My son is way too old to be testing this, but I'm telling you, I mean, boy, it'd be fascinating to try one of these out. I think it's for people who can afford it and don't want to be sitting there rocking their baby. I didn't mind doing it. Anyway, that is two of the craziest new gadgets that I've seen in the baby world, and it seems like there's only going to be more of them. All right, real quick, I just had a message from somebody, one of our listeners, I won't name who it was, messaged me and said, "Hey, Jeff, I saw on another website that the best smartwatch is the Tag Watch. Is that true?" And it's funny that you asked this, because I think a month ago I wrote an article for Men's Health where I round up the five best wearables. And I did include the Tag Connected as one of the ones that should be in that list. I definitely said it's not the best one. And the reason it's not the best one is because the battery doesn't last a day. Now, that means you can't do sleep tracking. That means that if you go out of an evening, you could end up with a watch that doesn't even tell the time. And for those very clear reasons, it's not. It's also very heavy and very bulky. Now, I won't mention the website. It's unbelievable. I won't mention the website that has claimed the Tag Connected $2,000 plus as the best smartwatch. I won't even mention them. It's sad. It's embarrassing that they do that. And I'm pretty sure that they have not paid the money for that watch either. It's disappointing. And I don't want to end the podcast like this. This is silly. But look, ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to second guess a lot of things that you do see on some websites. A lot of them are advertorial without mentioning, and a lot of them are spoken highly in hopes of keeping the product. Now, I'm usually very transparent. I don't think I've ever spoken about a product. In fact, I haven't. I've never spoken about a product where I'm being paid to do so without mentioning that this is a sponsored product. That this show is brought to you by. It's pretty clear that that's a sponsorship announcement. And when it comes to product, I talk about every single thing, whether I am keeping it or not. I'm honest about every single product and every single review that I give. I would never ever say, I don't care what the brand is, but if a smartwatch cannot make it through the day, if a smartwatch cannot make it through the day, meaning I can't do sleep tracking, meaning I can't potentially go out for a night at dinner, go to the bar, whatever the case may be, and worry about not being able to tell the time, I'm sorry, it's not the best smartwatch on the market. It cannot be. Just on looks alone, it's never going to be the best smartwatch on the market. So look, to the person, I'm not going to mention your name. I'll contact you back directly. Just stop reading that website. That's it. That's all I can ever say. Stop reading that website. And when they do segments on the TV, just know that probably the majority of those things are also advertorial as well. It's sad, but that's just the world that we live in. Some people have to make a living, and I understand that. But I just think disclosure is really important. And I think people who make a living from doing what I'm doing at the moment for you guys, I think disclosure is important. I think that if you're being paid for something, you should say so and not disrespect listeners, viewers, readers, by telling them that something is the best when you know full well that it's not. I care too much about your money. As we just spoke about Carl looking for a $250 phone, I don't look to a brand to think about how they're going to fund my living and then recommend that brand. I just look at jbhifi.com and I try and look at your price point and find literally the best way you can spend your money. And I feel like I did. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you've been amazing. If you have any questions, as always, you can SMS me 0467-439-078. You can reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Search my name and you'll definitely find it. You've been listening to Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani and I will speak to you again next week. Oh, by the way, next week's interview is I mean, this week was about dental hygiene, and it's been amazing to see how many people are listening to that. It's kind of gone through the roof. Next week's one is about coffee, smart coffee machines, how to make the best coffee. We do put some tech around this. It's definitely going to be about coffee, though. So if you like a good morning brew or an afternoon, you're going to need to listen to that show on Tuesday. Speak soon, guys. Bye-bye.